Auburn, your 2024 SEC tournament basketball champions. Guys, this was a huge win for Auburn. This was something that nobody had them penciled in at the beginning of the year. This was a team that a lot of people said, they might finish a little over top half in the SEC, maybe fourth or fifth was their ceiling. This was a team a lot of people had written off, not only in the regular season, but most definitely for the tournament. And let's just say Auburn heating up at the right time. They showed everybody they were wrong. Huge win for this team. And there are a lot of people trying to discredit it, saying, oh, well, Auburn had an easy path. All the better teams, in quotes, got knocked off, just knocked off by the teams that Auburn beat, knocked off by double digits, just beat the brakes beat off on that team Auburn's beat. So don't let the haters try to take this away from Auburn, what they always do. This was a huge win. Auburn beat some very good teams that were on fire. And that is exactly what I'm talking about on this episode of the Auburn Daily Show. I want to thank you guys all for tuning in, supporting the show, whether it be on YouTube, podcast, like, subscribe, comment, all the things. Helps us out a ton here. I'm your host, Alex. You can find me on social media at Auburn Memes. Was there the entirety of the trip to Nashville, and it was incredible. The energy in that arena, I mean, it was so thick, you could just take a slice of it out of the air. It was awesome, not only with the energy from the team, but the fans. I mean, it really was a home game. I mean, we make the joke of, like, oh, this is a jungle, Auburn North, but that stuff really was true. The people, the fans that were there, I mean, they really made this a home environment. You could just tell how the team fed off that, and that really got them through these games up until the Sunday game, and especially the championship game. So I want to talk all about that, not only just the game, the tournament, for this episode. Now, we'll be back at you Wednesday with Andrew. We're going to talk about the March Madness tournament with Yale and going up to Spokane, Washington, all that stuff. We'll get there. We have a big show on that Wednesday, but I don't want to take away from just how, like, just how monumental and awesome this is for this team, kind of all things considered, and that's what we're going to really talk about on the show. So before we get into it, I want to thank our show sponsor, the Rage Room. You heard us talk about Birmingham, No Plug Rage Room. It is a blast. Now, granted, Auburn won, so you may think, oh, what do I need a Rage Room for? You can still celebrate. You can still break stuff, celebrate. Get a big old table of breakables, glass, bottles, printers, electronics, windshields, all the stuff. Bats, mallets, hammers, you can smash it. Play your own music. Have a blast. Right in the Birmingham area, you can check out the Birmingham Rage Room or the Auburn Opelika area. Check out the Opelika Rage Room. Go to the respective websites, book online, tons of information on there. They've been an awesome sponsor of the show. And just tell them, hey, you know what? I heard about this on the Auburn Daily Show. They'll get you some free stuff, just some extra breakables. Just mention it to whoever's checking in at the front desk. I want to thank them for that. So let's move on into this game. Auburn faces off against Florida. Now, Florida had been in a little bit of a tear here. Auburn was hot. I was nervous to kind of mention it too. Mississippi State, Team of Destiny. Mississippi State was playing Auburn pretty close. First and only single-digit win that Auburn had for the entire season. But alas, Auburn rebounded from that and beat Florida by 19. Now, before that, Florida beats Alabama. Very, very soundly beat at Alabama, 102-18. That one had me a little bit nervous. I was like, they are playing pretty hot. They beat Georgia the first game by 5, 80-85. And then they faced off against Texas A&M, a good A&M team that was playing pretty hot as well. And that was really all these games in this tournament were really good, especially all the later round games. I mean, this was a lot of good basketball. So for the folks who got to see it in person or just were like tuned in and watching this on TV, a lot of really good basketball here. The point of it being is that this Florida team was playing hot. Now, that does leave the question saying the number of games they had played to get in here, were they potentially a little bit tired? And that is definitely something to consider, because that extra game playing there that many days, that A&M team too that they played the day before, very physical team. Now Mississippi State was as well, so I think it was kind of easy to say that it took a little bit of teams a few minutes to kind of get in their groove. I mean, they're playing at that noon tip off earlier by basketball standards for sure, especially for guys who don't know what their schedule was the night before, how late they were up, new scouting, game prep, all that. So probably been a little bit more fresh at 2 o'clock, maybe. Maybe same deal could be said for the fans. I know, especially myself and other fans up there, it's just like, oh, we're going for another one. It was definitely an exhausting trip, and it was just nonstop in the best way possible. And we also went up there to check out gymnastics. Saturday night. So we were going a lot of Auburn coverage while up in Nashville. But for this game, everybody can remember it started out, Auburn took a pretty nice lead. I think it was 7-2. Then, of course, their center, Micah, and I don't want to mess up his last name here. I think it is Henlogton. If I didn't get that right, I apologize. Obviously goes down with a very severe injury, leg injury. Obviously, thoughts and prayers go with him from everybody. Nobody wants to see any athlete get hurt, more or less a very serious injury, which that one did appear to be, and took a very significant amount of time to just pause and get him checked out. And his family had to come to the court, and it's definitely a very disheartening thing to see. So obviously we are hopeful that his recovery from this is as speedy and as painless as possible. But more or less, hate that for him, hate that for the team. You never want to see anybody get hurt. You want to beat or play a team really at their best, and having somebody goes down. And obviously this was something that Auburn had a kind of hit close to home with Auburn with what happened with Chuma a few years ago with the North Carolina game when he went down, obviously had his severe injury as well. And you hate to see it, no matter if it's yours or another team, because at the end of the day, these are all student athletes. They give it all to their game. And that kind of literally led the question of like, how is Florida going to respond to this? How are they going to go? Is this going to be more emotional for them? How's Auburn going to be? You've sprinkled in some extra emotions to the game that weren't there before. So then you don't really know what that factor could be. Are they going to come out? Are they going to be something? Da, da, da. Now, as far as a production standpoint, obviously this is your starting big man. So you got to kind of wonder how that's going to look. How it's going to face up with Broome. He had been averaging about five and a half points for the season. I think last time he played Auburn, he had 4 points. So from a point standpoint, not a big man that puts it up on the points, but definitely a defensive factor. I think last time he played Auburn, he had either 5 or 8. I can't remember the number off the top of my head. A decent amount of blocks, though. So he was definitely when they played Auburn in Gainesville, he was a factor defensively. Like I said, didn't get a ton of points. I think he'd been averaging somewhere in the 20s on minutes. I think last time he played Auburn, he might have had 28. I'm getting my eights and fives confused this episode. Played a lot of minutes. They had their backup man in there. It did not seem like had he played this entirety of the game that the results would have been any different, considering it was a 19-point game. So don't know if that would have been a factor had he stayed healthy or not. It definitely changes Florida's game plan a lot, but just, unfortunately that is just the nature of the sport that, you know, these things happen. We hate they happen, and just you have to be ready to pivot all the same. So Auburn kept Florida, I want to say they kept them under 10 points until almost 10 minutes into the game. So Auburn was keeping it low scoring. They definitely did their job keeping it pretty. I think I even said it about how this team had been just bam, bam, bam with points, 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 points. Very high shooting team. And I think to keep them to 67, very impressive to do, because this team has been doing it very well all season, especially as of late, though. That's the key here. So KenPom's adjusted offense for Florida is 14th. Defense is 83. So this is definitely an offensive firepower team as opposed to defensive. But point being, I'm just going to look this up here as we go live. That is the last time that Florida had scored points that low was against Texas A&M. And that was on, wish they would have a date for this game. That's why I look. Drum roll, February 3rd. So it had been nearly a month and a half since Florida had been kept in the 60s. This is a high scoring team. So that is a huge, you know, the defense traveled. And then before that, when they played Tennessee, probably a few weeks before, and then it does not look like any other time for this season. So this is one of three games that Florida has been held in the 60s all season. So that in itself is a very impressive feat that Auburn had. And then they did what they needed to on offense. Not that Florida's a bad defensive team by any stretch of the imagination, just offense is their strength. And you saw that with Alabama. I mean, they put over 100 on Alabama twice. Not that Alabama's a great defensive team necessarily, but still, if you can put on 100, if you're doing that regularly, that's a scary thing to face off against. This could have been a shootout of a game. Obviously, if they'd done that against Auburn, it would have been bad news Bears there. But that defense, if you can scale that defense, if that defense will travel with you a lot of the haters said, oh, Auburn can't do this away from home. Shout out South Carolina. Well, guess what? They did it away from home. And let's look here. 19-point victory. Auburn goes into half with a nice cushion lead. And you never know, because like I said, Florida had come back against A&M. That game was going back and forth. And I kind of said that on the recap show of the Mississippi State game. I said, you know, no lead. I mean, nothing would surprise me. No lead is safe with this Florida team. This would be one that, like, it could easily come down to the wire. Don't, you know, unless you're just up by just an absurd amount of points, do not just rest on that at all. And Auburn came out up by 8 in the second half. And then what do you know? You blink, a few minutes go by, and then this is a 1-point game. And I might have had my stomach sinking a little bit at this point. I'm sure a lot of other people did. Like, this is just how it happens. They're going to get hot. They're going to get the few fans they did have there going to get into it. And props to them. I mean, they weren't a lot of Florida fans, but the ones that they were just screaming their heads off in those few moments that they did have a chance to do that. And it was just like, is this? You had the Auburn fan. You had the PTSD coming back. This is the heartbreak. This is what it's like. Auburn gets it. Like I said, Florida gets it within 2-1-point game. And it kind of sits there for a little bit. It was kind of nerve-wracking. It was like the longest. Let's see how long it stayed that way. It was almost 2 minutes of game time that it was just 1-point game. And that felt like a freaking eternity. And as you know, neither team was hitting it. It was rebounds and one made any points. And it was just like, all right, which team is going to take this? Because we're at a crossroads here. There's about 15 minutes of game time left. Some team's going to take this thing and run away with it. And if it's going to be Florida, this is really going to stink. And here we come. And now I got a shout out. This is what I was leading up to this episode for this moment. Here comes Mr. Reliable, Mr. Steady, Mr. Efficiency, Chris Moore. Now, Chris Moore had gotten a lot of flack really throughout his career, especially this past season, some of last season. Or, we need to upgrade the position to the three. He's not any good. He's this, he's that. Unfair. I've always been a Chris Moore defender. And also, too, I think the coaches have a pretty good gauge of this roster and who needs to be playing what minutes. The rotations are very good. And I had always said on Chris Moore's, his my defense of Chris Moore, because it was statistically accurate. It was game eye test accurate. Chris Moore had always been a very efficient player. And the stats backed that up last season until he hurt his shoulder in that Ole Miss game. And then those statistics did drop, but also, too, he was hurt. It made sense. He did play through a lot of that. And I've mentioned this numerous times on the show, but in the March Madness game against Iowa, you could tell, I think it was Iowa or Houston, I think it was Iowa, he just grabs that hurt shoulder and just let out a bellow pain. So you obviously knew that for the weeks prior to that, between the Ole Miss game and that March Madness game, that shoulder was not at 100%. But Chris Moore had always done really well with shot selection. He got a lot of points, but he got efficient points. His plus-minus was always good before that. And this year, that definitely kind of dropped off. You hadn't seen as much of that. Now, Chris was not the guy that was turning the ball over. He was not the guy who was taking a lot of bad shots. Very steady defensively. Just wasn't a huge factor kind of either way. Definitely much more defensively than offensively, but wasn't a liability either. Kind of a similar play to what Zepp would do. Wouldn't light it up offensively, but was still a very steady body and a problem and just consistently knew the assignment at all times when he was on the court. So it's kind of a very thankless deal, but obviously from a coaching standpoint, that's very important. Well, what does Chris Moore do here? He does that. He shows he's been a part of this team. He knows the system. He's that guy. Does not miss a shot in this SEC tournament. 100% all the games he had very good points and very key points. So let's just say this here. The game is 44-45. Chris Moore gets the steal. Chris Moore gets the layup, puts Auburn up by 2. Okay. And then what happens? Then what happens after that? Jalen gets a rebound, gets it to Trey. I'm sorry. Jalen gets the rebound. They get it down. Trey hits the Dylan, I think, assisted Trey for that one. Sorry, I got that one mixed up. Trey hits the 3-pointer. And then right after that, Trey gets the steal, gets it to Denver, dunk. And that all happened within about a 15-second sequence. So Chris Moore kind of started that spark where you had just nothing for 2 minutes. And then Chris Moore gets his points. A few series go back and forth. And then Trey makes a 3. Denver hits the dunk. And then it was just foot on the gas for Auburn. When Trey hits another 3, Denver gets another layup. And then from there on, it's just everything was going Auburn's way. So that was pretty much all she wrote. And then after that, Auburn just had the momentum and just they were in Florida's head. And at that point, you could tell Florida was in panic mode and Auburn was in a, this is our game. The crowd was into it. The bench was going crazy. The coaches were up. The refs were not calling to tacky fouls. But Pat Adams was reffing that game. You kind of know how that goes. But Auburn, just everybody did not. It was just, you kind of look at who had a bad game. Everybody was on. They were in Florida's head. And obviously, it became very emotional in a good way for Auburn and a bad way for Florida. And Auburn at that point had spaced it to 10 plus, 12 plus, and then just started getting higher, higher in the teens. And then it was just kind of at that point, just kind of playing with free money. The walk-ons get to get in there. Auburn closes out the game. And the thing that you could really tell from this one is, one, just they kept their composure. The coaches were very good with the rotation. They were very good at keeping guys out of foul trouble. Still not the best at kind of defending some of those transition shots. Now, granted, I think it's better from the entirety of the game to just let somebody get a transition layup than get the foul, especially if it's a, you know, one of the bigs, Janai specifically. Dylan did great defending under the rim. Dylan had also some just key energy shots as well, just to keep the crowd and the team just dialed up to 100. Now, I will say this here. The unnecessarily but awesome play of that game was when Chaney Johnson just got that block like toward the very end. That was just the points like wouldn't have mattered. Maybe it would have been a 68-86 game. Chaney gets to there, does the just massivest of hustle plays ever. I mean, about could have broken the glass off that rim and just throws, just the roof explodes off that arena. If you were there, you remember that play. If you saw it on TV, you probably heard the thud, not just from your speakers, your TV. It probably just resonated. That's how loud that was. That's the intensity that this team is playing with. And they get it. And you can just tell in the post game, huge emotional speech from Bruce Pearl. He, obviously with the loss of his father and just the shout out there, how much this meant to him, playing for him and all the stuff he does without Liv. It just, it's hard to not root for the team and just really feel that connection of just, you know, I'm going to get sappy here, but you got to love the team. And I think Bruce Pearl said it, and I think this is a key to it, is he just says, this team gets along better than any team I've ever had before. And I think that chemistry that these guys have on, but mostly off the court, because they're on the court, you know, 2 hours, how many minutes per guy, like, but the hours and days and weeks and months that they spend off the court, that chemistry culminates to what's happening on the court. And for them to have that so strong and so locked down, I think that's what you're seeing. And that the, as these guys have gotten to know each other since last fall, since a lot of this team transferred in, and you're just seeing how dialed in, you're seeing guys high five, you're seeing guys hug, you know that these connections are genuine. You know that these guys are brothers through and through on the court, ride or die for each other no matter what. And then when you have that, and you also have that, see, Nordic, you're not having, there's not a just massive star-studded top lottery pick talent on this team. This isn't like what it was with Walker and Jabari, where it's like, oh, you know, that's going to be a top one, two, or three. What pick is he going to be? This isn't your NBA-loaded team. This is your very, very talented, very good collegiate team, senior-loaded, experienced, battle-ridden team. And you saw that last year with San Diego State. That was just loaded with seniors in the run they were able to make. You saw that even too a few years prior, was much hate to shout him out, with Alabama led by Herb Jones, a guy that, you know, don't ever want to give any love to Alabama, but he's kind of that quintessential guy who's just like really, really star-studded, decorated, experienced, battle-proven collegiate player. And those are the type of guys that have the experience and also the chemistry with their team that are poised to make runs in March, especially when they're heating up. Now we go to KenPom. Auburn is now, as of today's ranking, they are 10th in adjusted offense and 4th in defense. So Auburn, in the 4th overall in KenPom. Auburn is playing on fire. Now, it's a little ridiculous as you look at all these advanced stats, you look at the pedigree and the resume as a whole, you're looking at all, you know, one seed for the top three in KenPom, 4 seed, and it's 2 seed, 2 seed, 2 seed, 4 seed, 1 seed, 3 seed. you know, you're kind of scratching your head and you're like, okay, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why is there this massive disparity? That will be a conversation we have for another episode, because I know everybody's thinking it. We're not going to talk about the ridiculousness of the seeding here, because like I said, we're going to take a moment to just bask in how awesome is they got this championship. A lot of people didn't think it would happen. They were not a favorite for this, at least going into the tournament. I mean, even there were even people before, Tennessee or Kentucky or Alabama, maybe Auburn will make it to the finals, but they'll lose to who, Alabama or Kentucky, you know, whoever it may be, or will it be a Cinderella team like an A&M or Mississippi State? There was not a lot of talk that Auburn would be the team to do this. Not only did they, did it in a commanding way. I mean, the only single digit win you had was against Mississippi State. Of course, like I said, they had to eat. You're seeing a lot of, you know, Bama fans. Oh, they had the easiest run ever. I said, you can't say a team had the easiest run ever that dropped 100 on you twice. And what A&M and Mississippi State did to Kentucky and Tennessee respectively, it wasn't like they lucked out of those wins. All these teams beat the brakes off of the teams they played prior. Like, this was not an unearned SEC championship. Don't let the haters try to define that it wasn't. But back to the team, the celebration, you could just tell how much it meant to them, just how genuinely happy they were. And there's a lot of guys that worked very hard to get here. There's a lot of guys that were doubted along the way. I was going back looking at receipts. You're seeing about all this. Oh, look at the teams. I got the graphic here from one of these accounts. I think it was On3 that did it. It was about teams who won big in the transfer portal. You had Alabama, you had Arkansas, you had LSU, you had a few other non-con teams that really didn't win in the transfer portal respectively. And then you kind of had Auburn's class. It was like, oh, well, they kind of got the table scraps here. They got a JUCO kid. They got a D2 kid. They got Auburn didn't really do it. Well, look at how those guys are playing. One, because they were evaluated very well and they were coached very well and they were diamonds in the rough. And that is Bruce Pearl's bread and butter. You look at Chaney, you look at CBM, you look at Denver and how they're all playing right now, how they're continually getting better and better and hitting their ceilings. Take that transfer class against some of the best of them. Everybody came to this tournament talking about, Dalton Knecht, what did he do? That didn't do great. Look at what these guys did, and then just the team balance of it. No one really played poorly. And the craziest part is, for the tournament as a whole, Jalen Williams didn't really even have Jalen Williams-type games. He was fairly quiet by Jalen standards, as he's been doing this season. So that kind of gets you thinking over here, like, this team's not even – like, they're heating up, but they're not even remotely close to hitting on all the cylinders they could. And that's the beauty of the depth, is because it just – there's so many angles, so many guys can go off at any moment. I mean, Jalen Williams only had – let's see here – 16 plus 6, what would that be, 22 points? So Jalen Williams has 22 points the entirety of the tournament. That's not going to – Jalen get that in a game. So he had 3 against South Carolina, he had 13 against Mississippi State, and 6 against Florida. Statistically, he did well. But Jalen has the ability to do it, and he didn't even need to. So he did Jalen Williams. And KD was kind of fairly quiet, respectively. Very good on defense, though. But the key is the guys did what they needed to do to win and win effectively. Broome is still just being Broome. CBM doing his thing. Now, Denver heating up, and we've been saying it and saying it and saying it. That's the kicker here. Denver getting hot makes me excited. I think it makes us all excited. He's getting his 3 shot back. And the fun part, too, about this is the threes that the team is making. Now, they shot 32%, or actually a little bit better than that. Florida's a fast team, though. So, they were not just letting Auburn get any wide-open shots. Now, the interesting part is the first part of the game, when it seems a little bit slower, Auburn was getting some good looks. Just stuff wasn't dropping. And it was funny because I overheard a Florida fan talking about how, and this is when Florida was still in the single digits for nearly 10 minutes, about how this, in quotes, Auburn team doesn't look like a top 10 KenPom team, offensive and defensive. I was like, you're almost got your Auburn was beating you by twice what you've scored. You're still in the single digits. 10 minutes have been played, and you're saying this, and you're continuing to say this as this game does its disparity, where it was only close for maybe 4 minutes in the second half after the beginning of the game. Wild take. So, but the good thing here is that you're seeing the threes come through. Now, Jani hadn't hit his threes, so that's another thing they're not hitting, because he was on fire with those. He didn't hit a ton of them this tournament. So if that heats up too, oh boy, be fun times. But the good thing here is you see the threes. You're not seeing one or two players hitting all the threes. you're seeing a lot of guys get one or two, but they're keeping their percentages healthy. They're not just bricking five or six. You're seeing CBM get one. You're seeing Denver get one. You're seeing Aiden get one. You're seeing Trey over there get two. It's spread out, so you don't really know who you need to defend where, and that's been very helpful. Because they're able to kick the ball out, so you don't know, all right, am I going to go out and am I going to get him? Is he going to dump it down low to Janai or Jalen or Chaney? I mean, if they can just keep up that balance of scoring really at will from anywhere with everybody, so this is going to be a very, very hard team to defend and count and stop because, one, they can all do it from anywhere, and they're all staying very fresh. And we will kind of break down who's got what coming up in March. I think most people feel that this is mostly going to be a – probably a showdown if all goes as chalk. And you can never know. It is March Madness. But if all goes chalk, that the deciding game here between Team of Destiny or just sadness, tears, will be that UConn game in the Sweet 16. Well, granted, if Auburn makes a Sweet 16, that is still a season. I mean, Sweet 16 with an SEC tournament championship and you're, I think, the runner-up in the SEC regular season – it's a season you can definitely hang your hat on and feel good about it, especially if you lost Sweet 16 to the top-seeded team in the country. We'll talk about it later. And if they beat UConn, then all right, we're having a different conversation here. But the team is they're all playing very well. They have responded. The way this team has responded from that Kentucky loss has been fantastic. Like I said, even though they had the loss to Tennessee afterward, they still played a heck of a game against them, and that was obviously a hostile environment on the road. From here on out, there's no more away games. They're all neutral. Everybody's playing with the same set of cards here, so it'll be quite something. Now, the one thing that does kind of stink here is if Auburn does inevitably play UConn in the Sweet 16, if all goes to chalk there, and they do take care of Yale and or UAB / San Diego State, that will be in Boston, which is decent, a little bit closer to UConn than it is Auburn. But you know what? Auburn fans got to travel. They got to take care of business. And that's it's March Madness. You take the punches. Every game's tough, especially when you get that far into it. And that makes this one of the most exciting postseasons ever. Guys, buckle up. It is going to be a blast. We are going to be there for every step of the way covering this thing. And of course, make sure to get your Plains coffee. What do they say? We sleep in May. Well, guess what? You're going to need to stay up for March and beginning part of April. Run coming. Get your Plains coffee. Discount code Auburn for 10% off. Shipped right to you. The freshest coffee. Ground. No more than 24 hours before it ships to you. Tons of flavors and some teas. You're in a coffee drinker. Want to shout them out also for thinking of the show. That's going to wrap us all up. Auburn is your 2024 SEC Tournament Champions. That was right there. You see, got my directions wrong. Right here. Here. Third time's a charm. That's all I talk about. There's the only one subject matter here. SEC champs said, we'll be back at you Wednesday with the March Madness preview show. We'll talk about the bracketing, the seeding, the projections, all the things with Andrew. We're going to be buckled up into this thing and still deciding if we're going to make it Spokane or not. So I hope we can. Hope we'll be there for every game of this, covering it for you guys. Thank you all for being the best part of the Auburn Daily Show. Please like, support. Please like, subscribe. Help support the show with all that. And thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be at you again next time.